The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Friday, end of another week. We step into the weekend, and it's holiday time, so hopefully you'll get out, and there are a lot of things to do this holiday season. So let's put the angst beside us and try to have a wonderful time. Remember to be kind and pleasant to other people. It doesn't cost you anything, and no matter how grumpy you may be, it's a good time to be happy. So let's try and do that this holiday season. It's pretty grim out there otherwise. All right. What we're going to do tonight is spend the first 2 hours with two gentlemen who have been working on a book, which is coming out after the first of the year, which, gosh, is in 4 weeks. Their names, their brothers, Brett and Mark. Brett is a former airline pilot who has had numerous UFO sightings and experiences since childhood. His brother Mark has taken almost all the photos for their new book, has also had numerous UFO sightings and experiences since childhood. I'm looking forward to this book. It's a unique one. We don't get a chance to have too many airline pilots, present or former, come forward with sightings, and I understand that Brett has had a lot of them. First of all, let's say hello to Mark. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, I'm here, Jeff.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
How long have you guys been working on this book?
Well, I started this book about 2 years ago, and it's pretty much finished now. I haven't brought it to a publisher because I got started on writing fictional short stories.
Oh, you're having fun.
Yes, I'm having fun, but I need to get back to this book and get it ready to go now.
Right. Okay. So, are we going to self-publish it? Are you going to shop it around?
Well, I think I'm going to try to shop it around, and I'm open to whatever it takes to get it published. I've never done that before, so it's all new to me.
Good. Well, I think you'll, from what I know, and we'll find out a lot more, I think you'll have something that will be of interest to someone out there.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, there's some really good publishing houses out there. The only problem with publishing books is it usually takes a doggone long for them to get the thing printed and actually out. You can take your manuscript in there, and a year later, they still haven't gotten it out. So, that's not uncommon, but there are exceptions. All right, Brett, are you there?
Yes, Jeff. Hello.
Hi, welcome aboard. Thanks for being here. How many hours did you put in as an airline pilot?
Oh, gosh, I quit logging somewhere after 20,000. So,
really?
You know, it's probably between 25 and 30, somewhere in there, you know.
What kind of aircraft did you fly? The big guys?
No, regional.
Uh-huh. So you had kind of fun hopping around here and there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Had a great airplane. I mean, you know, it never let me down all those years, all the clothes, you know, but, you know, you have some hairy moments here and there. And
sure.
It was a great bird to fly, you know, my career in.
And those passengers don't usually hear about the hairy moments. If you're doing your job right, is that correct?
No, but, well, except for occasionally they experience the weather aspect of it. And sometimes the weather can get pretty crazy, you know.
When they were up on the ceiling, having forgotten to put their seatbelts on, they knew something was up. What did you ever try and, you must have, tried to calm them down with your best, most soothing voice, even though you know your hands were a little sweaty? Did that ever happen?
Oh, you know, I can count on one hand the times where you literally weren't sure of the outcome.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Those are most airline pilots in their career experience, you know, at least several of those situations.
I would think so.
You're glad when they're over with and you look back and you think, what could we do different, you know, so that never happens again. And
right.
Can
you tell us what kind of aircraft you primarily flew?
Yeah, I flew de Havilland Dash 8s.
Oh, yeah, I'm well familiar with those. Yeah, that's
yeah,
still...
It's basically, it's a tank with wings.
Yeah, that's still... That's flying. I mean, you don't... It's not all computerized. You fly that thing, if I have it figured out right.
Yeah, you know, it was the highest tech turboprop that hit the market when it came out.
Uh-huh.
But obviously, you know, now, of course, they still make them, and the ones they make, the 400 series, they're very sophisticated.
Yeah.
It's a common type rating to fly any of them, but the type that I was flying, 100s, 200s, and 300s, were more antiquated than the 400.
I must have been on one of those, because I would fly sometimes from Santa Barbara to Las Vegas, for example, on a Dash 8. And
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Great planes.
And Alaska flies a lot of them, you know. You see Horizon/Alaska out in
uh-huh.
Washington, you know, they've got a large fleet.
I'm in Southern Oregon. They come in here to Medford Airport in Southern Oregon, I think.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, you've definitely seen them there, for sure.
Yeah.
Great airplane.
Mark, let me make you've got a really good hot connection, so stay back when you're not talking from the receiver. I think we can actually hear you breathing. It's that good. So sometimes...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been told that.
Yeah, sometimes technology... Oh, you've been told you're a heavy breather. Is that it?
No. But on this phone, it sounds that way.
Yeah. No, it's a hot receiver, so that's actually good, because you sound very... You both sound good. All right.
Oh, that's good.
Let's, first of all, what's the name of the book, Mark?
The name of the book, as it stands right now, is Starcraft, My Experiences with the UFO Alien Phenomenon.
Good. Okay. And that works for you, Brett?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's such a huge part of, you know, our experience the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Starcraft is, as we have coined, a certain type of sighting that we see.
Right. There are many. I have up on the homepage now what appears to be a legitimate video of an extraordinary daylight sighting of a huge round disc. It's bigger than a disc. It's a mothership over Nevada somewhere with a cloud cover down below. And what appear to be, there are two fighter jets going by, one then the other, and they're obviously going by probably 12, 14, I don't know, they're in supersonic moving toward this thing. It's probably CGI, but if it's CGI, it's really good. And that's not to say that really good CGI is uncommon. But it's a very interesting video, and there's just a lot going on up there. Between the two of you, gentlemen, who has had Who wants to start this off? Don't argue. We got plenty of time.
I thought that I'd like to talk about probably some of the highlights that are in my book.
Okay.
And I would take everybody back to October 6, 1998.
All right.
It was like a sunny, clear, crisp fall day. Mm-hmm. And I lived down by the Seattle Center, just about a block and a half from the Space Needle.
Yeah.
And
that thing is still there, the Space Needle.
The Space Needle is still there, yeah. And
I want to tell you one thing. I went up to Seattle. I've only been there once. It was the coldest day of my life. It was 32 degrees and drizzle. And
and that dampness goes right through.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. And there were very large squirrels running around in the vicinity of the Space Needle at the base of it, and it was interesting. The view was great, I must tell you. I remember that.
So. Yeah, and I lived on the sixth floor of an apartment building with a big bay window that looked right out onto the Space Needle.
Ah.
And on that day, there was, a MUFON convention going on at the Seattle Center.
Uh-huh.
And which is kind of ironic, which you'll see later. But on that day, I got up about noon. At that time, I was staying up very late at night and getting up late in the morning. And I got up at noon and packed my little bag of drawing utensils, and I headed up to Capitol Hill to a coffee shop where I would do some drawing for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the bus up there, and I got to the cafe, ordered my coffee, and then all of a sudden a strange sensation came over me, and I looked at my coffee, paid for it, and left, and went home on the bus again without drinking my coffee or anything. And I didn't know why I did that, but I just felt that I had to do that.
What was this sensation? Was it, did you have a physical feeling, or was it mental, psychological, emotional? What was it?
Well, it was just a very emphatic feeling, and I didn't know what to make of it. And the odd thing is I didn't question it. I just went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home, walked into my apartment, went to the bedroom and opened the shade, and right in front of my eyes at eye level was a very strange aerial object. It was kind of all white with a dome on the top and the bottom and a rim around it. It appeared to be made of some kind of milky white substance.
Yeah, how far away from the window was it approximately?
That's kind of hard for me to tell, but it seemed like it was not very big, and it seemed like it might have been several hundred feet in front of me.
Uh-huh. Time of day again?
Yeah. Huh?
Time of day?
I would say maybe roughly around 2 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Good visibility conditions.
It was a bright, sunny, crisp fall day.
Yeah, that's what you said. Okay.
Yeah, so there was good visibility.
Yeah, so you went out to get your coffee to do some drawing, and you had a feeling to go home, and you did the right thing. You followed that feeling, and you went home, and you opened the drapes. What did you think when you looked out and saw this thing?
Well, my first feeling was just amazement and curiosity. Like, what is that, you know? It didn't look like anything I was familiar with. As you watched it, it would change shape. It would kind of morph into different shapes, and kind of half of it would disappear, and then then it would come back again. And it was moving slowly, I'd say a little bit slowly, to the west. And
when you first saw it, was it perpendicular to the angle of your window pane, so to speak? Were you looking right dead out on it?
I was looking right dead out on it. It might have been a little above eye level.
Uh-huh.
Across from me, not far across from my window, was another apartment building about maybe a five-story apartment building, and this thing was above that five-story building, but mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. really high above it. You know, maybe, gosh, it's hard for me to say for sure, but maybe 300-400 feet in the air.
Got
roughly.
It. All right. Do so we have a photo? Do we have one of our photos showing this? The white
you know,
one.
I didn't send a photo from that particular sighting.
Okay.
But a lot of the UFOs I saw roughly between 98 and 2004 were similar. There was a lot of differences, but there was a lot of similarities as well. So some of what you might be looking at from the pictures I sent to you are similar to what I saw that day, because like I say, the thing changed shape and would often look like some of the pictures that you have there.
Very good. Okay. All right. So what's going on? Are you getting any mental feelings of communication or...
Well, I
know that's a cliched thing to ask, but it's important.
No, it's actually very... that's a very good question, because later on I did get sensations and even some communications. But at that moment, I had a 8mm Hi-8 video camera that I had been using to make an amateur vampire horror film. And so I got
that was my next question, of course.
Yeah, of course. And so I had this Hi-8 camera, and I grabbed it and I started videotaping this object out, you know, from my bedroom window. The bedroom window at the time had the whole window would open outward. So I opened it up so I could get a clear view of the object and videotape it.
The whole window would open out. They don't often allow that anymore because they don't want people to jump.
Actually, they changed that because we have some suicides in our building.
There you go.
Yeah, and so they changed those windows out.
Not amusing to be sitting there at breakfast and look out the window and see somebody passing by.
Yes, and actually one of our tenants did see somebody passing by their window there. It was not.
All right, good. So this, let me just back up a little bit. Both of our guests have a lot of videotape, and I guess we would say that Brett also has taken a lot of videotape. You guys have really, I guess, spent a lot of time being ready to videotape things, and you've got some. Or is it primarily just you, Mark? Are you too, Brett?
I did
very little videotaping.
Okay.
Yeah, he got some videotape in Virginia. I got quite a bit in Seattle, like I say, between 98 and around 2004, it dropped off. But in this instant, though, so I started videotaping this thing out the window, and then it slowly moved to my left and towards my direction, and went around the edge of the building, so I couldn't see it anymore. And one of those photographs I sent you shows kind of what looks like a lightship, and there's a brick wall there, and that's that's the edge of my apartment building, and the thing was going.
Is that the craft we're talking about now, or the object, or something
that's
similar?
That's the object. In one of its forms, it would change from a light, what looked like a white light, to kind of a silvery white substance, to a dark substance, like a dark gray, and looking more metallic. So it was a shape changer of some kind.
So it changed shape as well as color.
It changed shape and color. If you take the videotape and put it in a video editing program and frame by frame it, it'll actually change shape every frame. So that's a shape change in 1/30th of a second.
That's 33 frames a second or thereabout.
Yes.
Okay.
So this thing would be changing shape from frame to frame often.
Now, in our pictures, that would be number 1, 2, 3... fourth picture down, we're looking to our left. The corner of the building is there. and there's a pure white object there, right? Now, what other shapes did it take on? I would describe that as a diamond with some kind of a cupola on
like
top of it.
Like a little crown on top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. How could it take on a donut shape where it had a hole in the center, and it would be like a donut shape.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, it would also take on what looked kind of like an egg shape, or an oval shape, actually.
And this is, you're not kidding about a different shape, potentially, every frame?
Yes, that was shocking to me. Somewhat after this incident, I frame by frame the whole thing, because I was finding all kinds of curious anomalies in the pictures.
Yeah.
But let's see, where was I here? Oh, okay, so the thing went behind the building, and here's where it gets really interesting, is I ran down the stairs of the building. I didn't want to wait for the elevator because I was so excited. I thought I'd chase this thing down and get some more video of it. And so I ran down the six flights of stairs, out the back door of the apartment building into the alley where there's a parking lot and an alley. And I was about to run around the corner, around the block, to see if I could find it, when I looked up in the sky, and it had come back, and it was hovering about halfway up the space needle, right by the side of the space needle.
Wow, like within 50 feet, 100 feet of it?
Well, I'd say the space needle is, I think, roughly 600 feet, and this thing was maybe up about 350, 400 feet.
But, I mean, off the side of it, away from it, how far?
Off the left side of the space needle, very close to the, the space needle. And it was small, and it was just hovering there.
Still whitish, or still changing?
It was whitish, and then it started moving off towards the west, away from the space needle. And as it did so, that's when it became a dark metallic-looking more three-dimensional looking object.
Right.
And,
it looks translucent here in the white incarnation.
Yeah, the white incarnation was sort of translucent. Certainly not transparent, but translucent for sure.
Got it.
And, it became more of a mechanical looking dark
Understand.
Gray.
Okay. They morph. This is unusual. And the rapidity, every frame is that's stunning. You could almost publish 33 frames to show 1 second and get all the different shapes in your book.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that was stunning to me as well when I discovered that. And I thought, what?
Wow.
So I'm down there, and I'm filming this object by the space needle as it moves, off to the west.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I was doing that, first of all, up to this point, there was nobody else down in the alley or the parking lot. It was just myself with my camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly somebody came out of the back door, and he stood right in front of me, like, maybe 5 feet in front of me, and said, what you filming there? In a kind of a strange, muffled voice. And I started to respond. I said, well, I'm filming something, and I was going to say weird. And just as I start to say weird, you hear what sounds like me being knocked out, like I'm going unconscious. And you can see the camera is still on, so apparently I slid, behind me was a brick wall, and I slid down the brick wall, I think, and the camera rested on the ground and was filming a crack in the sidewalk.
Whoa, this is wild. So the guy comes out, he's 5 feet in front of you, he's facing you, right?
Right.
And you're essentially filming behind
filming
him over his shoulder. And,
yes.
I mean, you might have told him, turn around. But you're in a situation there that this is suggestive, clearly, of an arranged, intentional, one-on-one encounter.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, that's what I was hoping people would get from this, starting with the coffee shop thing where I turned around and went home and then...
Oh, that's not random. No way.
Right. Yeah.
So this guy says that, and the funny thing is, I saw kind of a skeety guy with a t-shirt and baggy pants, but I couldn't see a face. And here I'm, so when he's saying this to me, I'm glancing at him, still holding the camera up, but with my other eye, I'm looking at him, and it was like he had no face. It was like a blank sort of, Caucasian flesh-colored face, but there was no features on it. And then right after that, like I say, I start to say the word, I've got something weird here. And as soon as I say weird, you hear what sounds like a noise I make with my mouth or something. And then it's like, ah. And then I slide down and the camera is looking at the pavement for, I don't know, maybe 5 to 8 seconds or so. And
then it goes off?
During that time, that's what's on the tape. My recollection of the event was I answered the guy, he walked back into the building, and I continued filming the UFO. That's my memory. But apparently what's on the tape, which I discovered some days later when I replayed the whole thing, was I get knocked out, apparently. And while I'm knocked out, a voice says, leave him. It's kind of a strange authoritative voice, and it says, leave him. And as soon as the voice says, leave him, I apparently wake up again, and you can see me standing up because the camera is raising from the ground. And it's still on, and it's kind of wildly flailing around, like I'm sort of stumbling around, waving the camera around with my arm. And so the camera is filming all kinds of things real fast because it's moving around, you know. And
did you happen to get a little shot of the guy himself at any point?
You know, I didn't get a shot of anybody. And, uh-huh. Of course, when I woke up, there was nobody there. And here's another thing is I didn't feel myself waking back up, nor did I feel myself going unconscious, but the tape seems to indicate that that's what happened there, and my memory of the events are different than what's on the tape.
It's suggestive of screen memories, maybe, implanted?
Yeah, definitely. It's something very odd happened there.
All right, another question, then I'm going to see. Todd, let's try and do our full break if I can here, but one quick question.
Yeah.
When you heard leave him, was that an auditory hearing or was voice to skull inside your head? Any guesses?
No, this was on the tape. I apparently was still unconscious when the voice said leave him.
And it was on the tape?
It was on the tape, yeah.
Oh, that's really eerie.
Yeah, this whole thing of me going unconscious, sliding down the brick wall and camera resting on the ground and the voice that says leave him, and there's some hard dress shoes sounds like somebody wearing hard leather dress shoes.
Got it.
None of which I saw when I was down there.
Wow. Alright, let me ask you to hold on right there, Mark. We'll come right back. I take a break.
Okay.
And we will continue. Hold on. Okay, let's get back to our guests, Brett and Mark. Let's go ahead. There's more to this, and I'm going to go over to Brett and talk to him for a little while.
Okay.
Tell us more about the story. This is fascinating that the words are on the video. Leave him alone. What was it? Leave him alone
leave
or
him.
Leave him now?
Just leave him.
Leave him.
And it's a male voice in English, and it sounds authoritative.
That would not have been a passerby. It wouldn't have been a security. Wouldn't have been a cop. Most anybody would have tried to help you. So
this was an odd sounding voice.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we could hear it, but maybe later when the book's out.
Maybe another time I can get that.
Yeah.
I can get that prepared. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. Okay, let's finish this up, and then we'll go over to Brett.
Okay. Well, of course, at this point, I'm frame by framing the end portion of the tape, the portion of the tape from the time I get knocked out to where, and the voice says, "Leave him," to the very end of the tape, because my memory it's different than
link up.
My screen memory probably is different than what happened on the tape. So I'm very curious. So I'm frame by framing this, and as I frame by frame it past the leave him voice, I find some very strange light anomalies on the tape.
Mm-hmm.
I found what looks like, I didn't send you this picture, but it looks like some sort of biological flesh and blood strange creature that looks like it might be out of a 1950s science fiction movie with veins in it and a weird snout. And it's just in two frames, you know, very quickly, because the camera at this point is moving around, because apparently after I was unconscious, I stood up and kind of stumbled around a little bit, so the camera is dangling out of my hand.
Sure.
Moving, yeah. So I catch that strange image, and then on the very end of the tape, in just two frames, there's a picture that I did send you that
we have
kind of, it looks a little bit like a gray alien with his hand towards the camera with three fingers.
No, it looks exactly like a gray alien with his hand up toward the camera and three fingers. And
there's an eye on
the left under the hand. There's an eye on the right. There's a very broad face. That doesn't look like a gray alien's face with a hand up, three fingers, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, because I didn't know what people might make of that picture, but to me, I was stunned when I saw that on there. I thought, oh, my God. You know, what's that?
That's not a Rorschach issue either. Those fingers, look at them. They're proportional.
Yeah, they're like,
yes.
They're sort of a little claw-like or something. They're odd.
Well, if you remember, do you remember at War of the Worlds, 1954, the first one?
I sure do.
Do you remember when the last craft died in the city and Gene Barry comes walking up to it? And the hand did not have three fingers on it.
I believe you're right. It's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I'm a big science fiction horror film.
Yeah,
fan, so.
Yeah. Okay, so there's your three fingers. I am very impressed with your work in this. This is an extraordinary story, to put it mildly.
Oh, thank you. What's funny is that this story is like about 20 years old, and a few years back, maybe 5 years ago, I was looking at all my pictures and reviewing all this stuff, and I hadn't looked at it for a long time, and I thought, my God, there's enough here for a book or something, you know, at least a record, a written record of it, and
that's when
I got on to writing this story out.
I would make one suggestion, then we're going to go talk to Brother Brett. I would consider making a DVD of selected video, including this, and sticking it in the back jacket as part of the book purchase. It's not done very often. It's not too terribly expensive to have discs mass-produced. Yeah, and you put a little plastic sleeve in there, and they just glue it in or whatever. But I think if you took this to
a good idea. I never really thought of that.
Take that to a publisher and see what happens. You might be surprised.
It might give them a little bit more enthusiasm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go over to talk to Brother Brett here a little bit.
Yes.
And, so remember about that hot receiver. And really wonderful job explaining that. You did just great.
Well, I was quite nervous, but I'm calming down now.
No, just you're fine. All right. Okay, Brett, when you were a kid, anything strange happened to you? Or did you see anything unusual that your parents didn't believe, didn't want to hear, or locked you in your room for a month with no food after you told them?
Not really. There's the incident in Issaquah when I was very little.
Issaquah is Washington State.
You're correct, yeah. And I think that may have been our first family encounter that we're aware of, but Mark's got a much better recollection of that than I do. I don't think, I can't really think of anything. You know, we used to go out camping when we were little, and we would sleep under the stars, and sometimes it seemed like the stars were maybe moving around, like a couple of them back behind the trees. And I think we observed that, but certainly nothing you could, definitively put your finger on and say, we were just kids.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we'd been looking up since we were, little, and we were interested in that sort of thing when we were little. We always felt like we knew they existed, even though we didn't know why we knew that. And then, as the sightings started happening, as we got older, of course, our belief about those things was confirmed.
Did you ever talk to your parents about these sightings? And did they ever tell you that they had sightings before you were born or when they were young?
No, my mother's the one that really... I mean, my mother's the one that actually was there when I had my first, what I consider my first confirmed UFO sighting,
right.
Even though I think there was a couple of previous to that, but this is the big one. And this is the one where I was welding, and I told that on your show last time.
Yeah, that was several years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the one where, I was welding. And,
well, tell us again, because nobody remembers. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. So I had a small welding operation at my aunt's house, and I was building gym equipment. I had some jigs, and I was, bodybuilding equipment, and
yeah.
I was a welder. So I was doing that, and it was a beautiful day in May. It was before noon. These are the things I remember about it. Margo and my mom were in the backyard. Margo had a beautiful backyard, beautiful grass and shrubs that she took care of. And my mom was chilling out. She was actually laying in the grass with her sunglasses on, just catching, some sun,
uh-huh.
while Margo was fiddling around with her flowers and things. And
who's Margo? Brett, excuse me. Who's Margo?
Well, Margo is her sister.
Okay.
Yeah, one of her older sisters. There was a family of 13, they were a big family, 13 children.
Wow.
And yeah, and so, and the house was open because it was nice out. So the breezeway was open between the garage and in the backyard. And my mom started calling my name, and I was out there welding. And, finally I was like, yeah, I'm welding, but she was persistent. So I took my hood off and dropped the rod, and went through the house. And she's laying in the backyard. She goes, Brett, and she extends out her arm with her sunglasses. She's holding her sunglasses. She says, hey, look at this. She says, look at this ghost ship. She points up into the air, and I look up at this thing. And, the instant my eyes hit this object, I knew I was seeing something otherworldly, and I can't really explain that. I just knew it. This is the ice cream story, the one single scoop ice cream. So it was a round disc with a cone on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all one piece. It was emanating light of its own making. It wasn't like a flashlight or a headlamp. It was, the whole thing was glowing.
What time of day was this, please?
It was before noon.
Okay.
Blue sky? It was blue sky, but there was one cloud in the sky that you could see from her yard, and it was literally right over the back, out off the backyard.
Okay.
And this cone is heading straight for the cloud when I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I only see it for, maybe 3, 4, 5 seconds at the most. And then it goes into the cloud. So, and this is a fairly dense little queue sitting up there. And I'm waiting for it to come out the other side. And it never does. And then after a moment or so, the cloud actually started to churn like you see in time-lapse footage. And I would say within 2 or 3 minutes, the entire cloud completely had dissipated and the object was completely gone.
When you say ice cream cone, I want to help our listeners a little bit. Was it looking like a single scoop on an ice cream cone with a pointed tip at the bottom or a squared off tip?
No, pointed.
Pointed. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
There's an old painting, you know, a Middle Age of the Middle Ages showing a flying ship like that.
Yes, I remember it. They're not common. But they may have been around for a long time.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, one cloud in the sky that disappears. All right. We get the picture. It's cloaked, or it just took off so fast nobody could see it and left the cloud to dissipate behind. So they'll do this. They'll throw out a cloud and they'll sit up there and no one pays much attention. Very interesting. Okay. What did you tell your mom?
Well, you know, she was laying there looking at it, and she didn't have that much to talk. She didn't want to talk about it that much. Interesting, but Margo was standing there, and my Aunt Margo had seen a couple of ships earlier in her life.
Mm-hmm.
So very unusual flying objects. Yeah, she would take the ferry, the late night ferry, and she told me once she was headed towards Seattle on a very late night ferry from Bremerton or Port Orchard or something like that. Towards Seattle, and there was lights flying, you know, like a uniform, like a couple of lights that were almost like scanning the city. They're flying over the city, and she told me the story. She said, I just knew that wasn't, you know, normal. It wasn't like anything she'd ever seen before, but she stood there and watched that, and she didn't have any trouble editing. She didn't need to edit that story. We talked a lot about it. My mom was very quiet about it. Then as time went on, my mom would deny it. She, oh, honey, I don't know what we saw. You know, she was kind of like that about it.
Interesting. Yeah, this is, again, the link I was suggesting earlier. Family, aunt is fine. You got a big family. This family may have been watched or interacted with quite a lot. Seems like if Aunt Margot had several sightings, that's a suggestion.
Of course, our grandmother on our dad's side, you know, had that sighting out in Redmond with all the lantern light UFOs that just hung in the sky for a very long time.
When she was a younger woman.
Well, she was. Grandma always was old, but she always seemed old, you know, to me. But she was, she was younger, but she was still elderly.
Uh-huh.
But she was insomnic, and she didn't sleep well, a couple uh-huh. hours a night. So uh-huh. she was wandering around in the halls, you know, at night, and she saw lights coming through one of the bedroom windows looked out onto the street in the cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And she decided to get a closer look. And when she opened up the shade, she said she explained them as like the most beautiful, lantern light geometric shapes just hanging in the sky.
Wow, fun stuff.
That was probably one of the first descriptions, I think, in our family that I'd really heard.
Uh-huh.
And my grandmother, I mean, this, you'd have to know my grandmother, but I mean, this is not, she was afraid to tell that story to people that she knew because she didn't want people to think, you know, that she was soft in the head.
Sure.
But she shared it with Mark and I, and we were, I mean, you know, it was a very intriguing story to us.
That's a nice little vignette. Okay, what else, Brett? We got about 5 minutes here in our first hour, so anything else cooking that you want to share?
You know, since I was on the show last, there's a couple of things that happened.
Really?
One of the things, I didn't tell you this, but I'm out on medical. I've been out on medical for a year and a half. I got in a bad car wreck and just about died. A year and a half ago, so I'm not flying now.
Wow. I'm glad you're alive. Car wrecks. You know what's strange about this culture? 45,000 Americans a year die on the damn roads, and nobody talks much about it. And over 3 million are injured on average every year. Now multiply
those are big numbers.
Multiply that by 10. You got almost a half a million dead. And 30 million injured. That's World War II.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's, I was flying out of Charlotte We blasted off, and we were making a turn out towards the west, and from west to north. And when we were climbing out, you know, because the nose is pitched up, and we're banging, you know, ATC is vectoring us around, so we're making banks and this and that. And I look up at the cloud cover, and I see a lot of geometry in the clouds. Now, geometry is something you don't see in normal clouds. So
no.
That was an immediate indication that, and I didn't have time to study what I was looking at because we were busy, you know, just departed.
Of course.
So I had my camera sitting right there, my phone, you know, smartphone, and I just flipped it on, hit the camera, and I just started snapping pictures, and I figured I'd just study them later. I looked out my left window, and I also saw a very unusual cloud display, which I caught that too. And later on, you know, downloaded them into the computer so I could look at them better and sent them to a few friends, you know, and got their opinions on it. But basically, it was a very interesting picture of a man's face. It looks like he's got, you know, like a crown of thorns, like Jesus, around his head, and
wow.
His face is pressed up against what looks like the lower lobes of a human heart. And in the throat of the face is a five-pointed star. And if you move down to where the heart might be on the body, where it would be proportionately, there's a, I'm not sure if I'm saying where the vesico Pisces, or how do you say that? You know, the two circles that come together creating the football shape in the
okay.
middle.
Yeah.
That particular geometry, that's
uh-huh.
also in the picture. Okay.
Ah.
Now this took a while to decipher it, to figure out what was being shown. But, and then the picture out the side window was of a body, a human body laying down, and it looked like slightly in wave form with the head missing.
Now this is weird. Now these, you say geometry, so you had angles clearly.
Oh yeah, sharp angles. Yeah.
Now all right. Let me try and figure this out. The clouds. What color were the cloud formations? Were they pretty much a uniform color? And these images were appearing over a uniform cloud cover that was colored, say, all grayish or whitish, or were the clouds...
Yeah, whitish on a blue sky,
whitish. Okay. Blue
sky on a blue sky, but the clouds actually formed the geometry.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
A message for
amazing.
Brett? Was this a show for Brett, do you think?
Yeah, well, later on I found, yeah, because I have some people that have helped. I have a few very psychic friends and
uh-huh.
that have connected in downloads with basically some of the StarCraft beings that have been flying over flying over my head. And so I got some information since I saw you last. And one of the things that it was like they were trying to get like this really important point across to me that I just wasn't quite putting it together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the point that they were trying to make, which they decided, I guess, to write it in the sky because, you know, Brett wasn't quite getting it. So they made a huge display above my airplane and basically, you know, deciphered what it boiled down to. And this has to do with the spiritual journey about this, all the UFO sighting things. But basically is that the heart is the key. The heart is the key. It's the antidote to the entire problem that we have down here. And the headless body on the left-hand window with the head missing was literally trying to show me to get out of your head, lose your head, and get into your heart.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Totally.
Yeah, get into your heart.
Yeah.
And they used the face of Jesus
uh-huh.
underneath the heart to make the point really strong.
Understood.
In other words, here this avatar, you know, Jesus, okay, is literally with his head back and a heart pressed against his face, literally showing that he literally was subservient to the heart.
Well, this is an image I would like to see someday, too, when the book comes out. I'm sure it'll be in there.
I can get that one to you. It's an amazing picture.
The heart is, this is not unusual, and many of you listening, No, that people feel that the heart is the true, we'll call it the brain of the body. The brain is just a computer. It's an electrical device. But we are taught, unfortunately, at a very early age to disregard the heart and to concentrate on the brain, that the brain is the leader, the brain is everything. It's not.
Oh, right.
It's not.
It's not.
There's something called heart math. Am I correct? Heart math? M-A-T-H? Some people have done research with hearts being brain-like in function, that they are much more than just a pump. Heart math, I believe, is what it's called. But anyway, we'll take a break. Come right back with Mark and Brett with more in just a few minutes. Hang on.